Hi, welcome to Everything My Parents Ever Did Wrong. I'm Maya Gamer. It is currently April 2020. For those who are counting, we are on day 31 of my family, as well as the state of Michigan's stay-at-home order. Today, I talked to Emily Feldman. Emily, who I go to school with, is one of my best friends, as well as one of the most hardworking and genuinely funny people I know. In the past episodes, we focused on how parenting affects children, but Emily brought up how different kids actually affect the way their parents raise them, which is really interesting. We talked a lot about Emily's health and fitness journey and relationship with food. I also made Emily play a game called Maya's Morality Test, which might be a recurring segment. We'll see. Enjoy! Emily, tell me something that your parents did wrong.
So what I'd say my parents did wrong is that they were very restrictive with food since my very early childhood. My mom is a dietitian, so that like eating healthy was always a thing in my house. We never had any unhealthy food. Like you think of a normal kid in America, like you think of what kind of food they had in their house, Oreos, Cheez-Its, Pop-Tarts, we had none of that. It was always healthy food, and they were very restrictive, and it led to me having a complicated relationship with food from when I was very young. I can think of a time when we had a pool party with a bunch of different families, and all I wanted to do was wear a bikini because that's what everyone else was doing. And I was probably like 10 years old at the time, and my parents wouldn't let me. And that was confusing to me. That definitely related to some body image issues I've had, like from a very young age. And that was tough. And so I tried to find safe havens of food for me. So I would sleep at my Zeta's house very often, probably twice a month, if not more. And going there was an escape. I could eat whatever I wanted in as much quantity as I wanted, and it was encouraged. My Zeta and Safta, they fed me. And they fed me a lot, and we had challah, and we had donuts, and we had anything that I could have possibly wanted, because that was what you're supposed to do at a grandparent's house. It was supposed to be an escape. It was supposed to be better than just being at home. And so I'd seek great emotional comfort there, because food had been turned into this emotional thing, and I would seek that out at their house. And because my parents were so restricted with food from the very beginning, I wanted to act out, as all teenagers do, just in different ways. But for this, it was food. And so, yeah, like I ate very healthy when I was at my parents' house at home. And I exercised, I danced, but I accredit a lot of my weight gain and weight issues to what I did when I wasn't under their parenting, but it was a result of that parenting and a lot of other factors. I mean, I'm genetically predisposed to just be overweight and have issues with food. I mean, for my mom, it was the same thing, and a lot of people on my dad's side of the family as well. But the way that they were restrictive certainly didn't help, so long story short, when I'd get those escapes, I would pig out and I'd go crazy, which was difficult for me. It didn't work out for me. I didn't feel good a lot of the time, but at the same time, it was the only thing that was making me feel good. So it was complicated.
What's really interesting about that is that, like, your mom is a dietitian, was very health conscious, and I would assume it was coming from more of like a place of like, we want to keep our family healthy, but it did affect you in that way where, like, food was very emotional for you. But I think now, like, you have, like, a remarkably healthy and non-emotional relationship with food. And so tell us, like, a little bit about, like, how that happened and how you made that decision on your own.
Yeah, for sure. So, and I knew that my mom's her actions and her desire to have us be a healthy family was out of concern, because she knew about our genetic predispositions, and she knew the same thing had happened to her. At 13 years old, she was over 200 pounds, and she didn't want that to happen to us. And so I recognized where she was coming from. It was just the way it manifested itself was complicated for me. But as much as she tried to help me, it ultimately came down to me having to make decisions for myself, because there was only so much, I mean, in general, there's only so much parents can do for their kids, and especially with this, because yes, she's my parent, and my parents are involved in a lot of my life, but I would be independent, and there are times when my parents are not around, and so ultimately, it was up to me. And so freshman year, I had gotten to a point where I was really, really unhappy. I was very overweight, and I did not feel well a lot of the time. I would get these awful migraine headaches. I'd have a stomach ache nearly every night, and that was really uncomfortable. And so I recognized that no matter how much my mom tried to give me advice, or my parents tried to help me, they weren't making decisions, I was. And so I had reached a point where I had to decide whether the discomfort I was feeling was going to be more or less uncomfortable than the discomfort I would feel from changing my behavior. And thank God, I decided that I couldn't go on like that anymore. It wasn't healthy. I was potentially pre-diabetic. I mean, I'd never got that diagnosis from a doctor, but seeing the path I was headed down, that was scary, but more than fear, because I wasn't necessarily looking at the long term, I was just very uncomfortable, and I decided that discomfort wasn't worth it to me, and it was going to be uncomfortable to change, but that I had to make that choice for myself. And I went through many trials and tribulations. I still do. It's still something I wouldn't say I struggle with it now, but it's still something I work at. Like, nothing's over now. But I made the choice to eat healthy, and I made the choice to work out and change my relationship with food, because everyone has a relationship with food, and I had to reform that. And I did get my mom's help along the way. Because she's a dietitian, she was able to be very helpful for me in a lot of ways, and we met once a week for a period of time to, as if she was my dietitian, and that was helpful. But this was once I had already decided to make that lifestyle decision for myself. Nothing she or my dad did brought me to this point. It was ultimately myself.
I think what's so impressive about your relationship with like fitness and health and food, that's very different from a lot of other teenagers, is that like it really was about like wanting to feel better. And I think like for you, I see so many people who get into exercise not like for fitness, but to further like conform to standards. And I'm so impressed by how much like for you, it's about wanting to like feel strong and feel good about yourself. Like, I think that is, I am like so impressed by that.
It really is about that. I mean, fitness and exercise has, in the past year, I mean, specifically, has become a huge thing for me, partly because it's a way that I can derive my own happiness, and it physically makes me feel good, and that's really powerful. I like not being able to depend on anyone else for me feeling confident and me feeling good about myself, and I love the process of working on myself, and getting fit has just had overwhelmingly positive benefits. And so, yeah, I appreciate it.
When we were talking about this episode, something that you actually talked about a lot, remarkably, was like how incredible of a relationship you feel like you have with both of your parents, and how you feel like everyone is very trusting. So talk about that a little.
Yeah, for sure. So I am responsible, whether that's how my parents brought me up or that's a personality thing, I'm a responsible kid, and because of that, I've never given my parents a reason not to trust me. We have a very, very open and honest relationship. I don't give them a reason to doubt anything I do. I tell them where I am whenever they ask or at all, like, I just tell them my whereabouts, and I'm open, and that is a two-way street, and it works out well for everyone involved. I get to be, you know, somewhat independent, as much as a 17-year-old can be in West Bloomfield, but I get to be somewhat
you can go to all the suburbs you want.
I know, go me. But I get to do that, and they get to be assured that I'm safe and that I'm being honest with them, and it works out really well. And I feel like this is one of the things I commend my parents for the most, because giving a child independence is scary. They gave me a car, and you know, that takes away a level of protection, and I can imagine that that's scary. But at the same time, they've raised me to be responsible and honest and trustworthy, and so it works out well. I enjoy it, and I respect them for that, and I hope, yeah.
A little bit earlier, my friend and I were talking about how often teenagers kind of like reflect like the opposites of their parents and are different in a lot of ways. You're really similar to both your parents in a lot of ways, but like, do you think it's like the parenting technique that worked well for you, or do you think it worked well because you and your parents are similar and communicate easily? Because I just wonder if like this happens in real life, but I think especially like you see characters on TV who like have very trusting parents and go wild and really take advantage of that, and I just wonder, like, is it really the parenting technique that is what works, or do you think it worked out well for you?
I think it's very possible it just worked out well for me, and that's because of who I am. I can't necessarily say the same for my siblings, because I'd say they parent us similarly. It could also be a part of me being the oldest child. I've always felt this responsibility to be, you know, perfect in a way, and to not give them any reason to doubt me. And so I think that it's the parenting, but it's also a big part of it is me. Yeah.
You just brought up something that I hadn't really considered, which is like which is parenting different kids differently, like within a family. And I never thought about my parents doing that, but like they totally do that. I think like what I'm now realizing that like a lot of what I've interpreted as like playing favorites is just like parenting different people differently, mm-hmm. which is really interesting to think about, because that never occurred to me.
Yeah. I think that I can see subtle differences in the way that, my siblings and I are parented, and that could be because of how old we are, because a lot of different reasons, but yeah, it's interesting.
On this podcast before, we've talked about Life 360 and how we don't like it and think it is like not a useful tool and just creates a lot of like manipulation and like makes kids lie. My parents don't use Life 360, but like they have access to my location. It's just, I mean, I'm a lot like you, where, like, they always know where I am, so it doesn't really matter. But you are a fan of Life 360. Please present your defense to us.
Okay, here's my case, and I'm unpopular in this among teens, but I don't care. So, I don't think it's an invasion of privacy at all. Until you're 18, your parents have every single right to know exactly where you are 24/7. So, if this app is a means to doing that, then that makes complete sense to me. That also may be partly because I don't have anything to hide from my parents, and I'm honest, so having this makes no difference to me. So that could be where my belief about this comes from. It also allows me to be independent. It allows me to drive with my friends and go get dinner and ice cream, and my parents know exactly where I am, and it's not an issue. Also, for me, I think I've been independent for a long time. I used to go to dance, you know, by myself without my parents there when I was pretty young. And so them knowing where I am has always been a thing. So I think when this app came out, like, it was kind of a no-brainer. They've always wanted to know where I am, and rightfully so. And I think that in terms of this app making kids sneakier, I don't buy that, just because I think that if a kid is sneaky and wants to not be trustworthy, this app isn't going to make them do that. They're going to do that anyway. Yeah, so I think that this app for me is, it makes a lot of sense. As a parent, I'm going to want to use it. I'm going to want to know where my kids are. And I hope to instill the same sort of parenting technique where we're both open and honest with each other. But I think that if this is an added level of security for my parents, let them have it. Then they know where I am. They know I'm safe. I know where I am. I get to have fun. Like, it works. It's mutual. It works out for both of us.
Okay, so I believe you. Like, that makes sense. I think a lot of parents think it'll solve the problem of their kids being sneaky. And I guess that then, like, what you just have to say is, like, your kids will outsmart the app. Like, it is very much possible to do.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't want parents to think that, like, that is a replacement for having that open communication that you have with your parents.
Right. So let me clarify. So I don't think that this app is going to solve anything. I don't think that by a parent installing this on their already sneaky kid's phone, this is going to be a solution. I don't think that at all. I think that establishing that trustworthy relationship is the first step, and this is a supplement, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I see that difference is for your parents, it's not about controlling where you can be. It's just like you were saying, like, it makes it easier because you don't have to text them every time you get somewhere.
Right, and I'm going to tell them where I am anyway. This is just, I don't have to actively do anything. Like, they just know.
Yeah. Okay, it's become a bit of a tradition on this show to talk about sibling dynamics. So,
yes.
You have a brother and a sister who are at least 3 years younger, 3 years, right?
2.5 years, yeah.
Okay, and then how much younger is Robbie?
Robbie is 6 years younger than me.
But then you also have a bunch of step-siblings who are the same ages as your siblings, which is very interesting. So, first I want to hear, I mean, we touched a little on you being an oldest and having that, like, responsibility and maturity. So tell us about that. But I also want to hear about what your siblings who are the same ages are like.
Okay. So let me start. So yes, I'm the oldest of everyone. I have, including step-siblings, 6 step-siblings, and I'm the oldest of all of them. So that bears its own responsibility. I've always thought it my job to lead as an example for my siblings, and to set high standards, I guess. I'll just go through everyone, because why not? I have Allie, who is the next in terms of biological siblings, Allie, who's 2.5 years younger than me, and then Robbie. And then from my mom's fiance, he has 2 daughters, Avery, who is 16, she's a junior, and Addie, who is a year older than Robbie, so she's in 7th grade. And then from my dad's wife, I have Max, who is Allie's age, he's a freshman, and then Talia, who's Robbie's age.
I think it shows a clear personality difference between me and you, that you talk about wanting to lead by example and have this responsibility, where, like, I my whole life have just wanted to be, like, the boss, and I think, like, I've just wanted to be in charge. Like, I'm always in charge of, I mean, because Oz and I go to school together, we're in the car a lot together, and it's like, I'm the boss, he needs to follow my rules. Like, we're very close, and, like, we spend a lot of time together because we, like, experience the same things. But it's never been, like, a set of high standard, you know? It's always been, how can I be in charge here?
Yeah, I feel that too, though, along with the standard thing. Especially because I drive my sibling, in the past 2 years, like, drive my sibling back and forth from my mom and dad's house. It's often been my job to, like, gather everyone up and make sure everyone has their stuff and take on that motherly type of position. So there's also that piece of control there too, which it's a love-hate relationship for me. I like having it because I like being in charge, but I also have found myself complaining about having to bear that responsibility.
Another interesting thing about your siblings that we talked about is that I think it's very easy for your sister Allie to feel like she's living in your shadow. You guys go to school together. You guys look so similar, like in the hallway so many times I've like gone up to her and almost said something to her that I meant to say to you. That doesn't really happen because O's like, it's just different. Like we're just not, I mean, we're siblings and we look similar, but like you guys really like could be twins. Do you think that's like made it, do you think she's a typical middle in that like she's much more like chill and laid back, or do you think she like tries to fight against that like association with you?
So both, I'd say. She is definitely the prototypical middle child. She feels not neglected, like it's not like her parents are neglecting her, but she certainly feels like she gets the least amount of attention because we have my brother who is erratic and demands attention in that way, and then there's me who is setting standards, I guess.
And you were first for everything.
And I was first, right. I graduated first. I had all these experiences that she's gonna have first. And she, I think, feels that. And so I think it was tough coming to high school in such a small school where everyone knows who everyone is, and her sort of feeling like she was in my shadow, and that's just my perception of it. But we also danced together for a long time, and I think the looking alike part of it is really interesting because it's not like anyone can do anything about that, but it does play a role. It's just like you see me and then you see her and it's like, oh, that's Emily's sister, because, you know, she looks so much, I mean, we look so much like each other, and it's just natural to associate her with me and less so with even O's because of that. I mean, there's a gender difference, and it's just the physical association is different. And I think, yeah, that feeling like she has to work to make her image unique is probably difficult. I never had to do that. That just comes with being the oldest child. Like, I am who I am, and I set that for myself, but I would guess that her and even potentially Robbie have to work harder to establish themselves as their own people in that way.
I think one of the funniest things that you've ever done is there was one day, I can't remember if it was this year or last year, but where, like, we were having a conversation about how, like, you've cried in public and in school a lot of times. And you ran around the school asking random people if they'd seen you cry. And, like, most people said yes.
Yeah.
Have you always just, like, been very comfortable with like, people seeing you cry? Because, like, then we did it for me, and I think, like, three people had seen me cry, and it was, like, indirectly.
Yeah, so I'm a very emotional person, and it's also partly an attention thing, probably. I'm not afraid to admit that I like attention. Listen, everyone likes attention. Only a select few admit that they like it.
I knew Emily would come on because Emily loves to talk about herself. She loves being interviewed.
No lies are being told here. yeah, so it's a combination of things. I really am a very emotional person. I've never been afraid to cry in front of people. I kid you not, Maya is telling the truth. I'd say 75% of the people that I asked that day had seen me cry in more scenarios than one. Like,
people could also, like, cite specific examples, and some of them were just so funny.
Yeah, I can share. So I lost the graduation speaker race.
I love this one. Tell the whole story.
Yeah, so sorry, Andrew, if you're listening. But
Andrew better be a dedicated listener. Andrew left a review of this podcast 2 years ago when I first started it, so I sure hope he's still listening.
That's really funny. Yeah, so Andrew had come to Hillel in eighth grade, and, I mean, we were friends, and it was time to submit a speech for graduation, the graduation speaker. And we both wrote one and delivered it to the grade along with a few other people, and would have been fine, but I was mad because Andrew had come in eighth grade, and I felt that this was an injustice because he had not had the whole Hillel experience that the graduation speaker is, I guess, supposed to have.
And he beat out, like, seven people.
Right, right, who had been there far longer than him, and he won, and I cried about it. Of course I did. I was really upset, and, yeah, so that's the story. I actually won graduation speaker for high school this time, even though we may not have a graduation, so.
You finally got him back.
I got him back. I got my revenge, even though it's not going to happen. But anyway, so that was an instance that one of the kids had seen me cry is when I lost graduation speaker. And I just thought that was a very specific, funny example. So I was like, yeah, that definitely happened. And there's probably many more. I came to school crying the day that Trump was elected. I mean,
I remember that as well.
Yeah. So it's that. I've never been afraid to hold back my emotions, and I'm also pretty good at expressing them. My family would say the same thing. And also the attention thing, because who didn't want some attention in high school? I mean, we all did, you know.
One of my earliest crying memories of you is when we were talking about Pretty Little Liars, and it became, like, too much for you. We were in art class, and it was just, like, too much. Like, it was too scary to, like, hear about. Like, we weren't watching it, which also scared you a lot. But we were just, like, talking about it, and it was just a lot for you to handle.
That's very funny.
I think one of the most interesting, well, not one of the most interesting, a funny thing that I've gotten to experience as a senior is these, like, huge college Facebook groups where, like, everyone who is admitted to the school, or like sometimes people who haven't gotten in get added to these groups, and everyone tries to like get friends and get roommates like in these Facebook groups, which is like the most stressful thing to even think about. And people make these like very fake posts, so these don't happen in Canada. So just, you know, for our Canadian audience, explain like what a typical post is.
Yeah, okay, so they'll have a girl, or I'll just use a girl as an example.
Yeah, that's like the best example.
Yeah, they'll post their highlight reel of photos at the high school football game with their friends in a bikini, whatever it is, on vacation in the Bahamas, and they'll be like, hi, I'm such and such, and I was admitted to whatever, I live about this many minutes from Ann Arbor, that's just my case, and I can't wait, some things I enjoy doing are watching Netflix, running, exercising, traveling, and I'm always down to go out, but I also love a chill night in. Like, that's the big one. People love a chill night in.
They do. They love a movie night with their girls. Or, like, a coffee study date. You know, school's their priority, even though they love to party.
Yes. They always say, I'm so committed to my schoolwork, but I also love to go out. And every post just follows that template, pretty much. And it's exhausting. Like, I kind of want to leave the group, because people are posting their best photos, obviously, because no one's going to post a bad photo of themselves. So that's one thing. Everyone is trying to make themselves seem likable, so they're posting generic things. So, like, my favorite artists are Frank Ocean and Tyler, the Creator. And
that's so true.
Really basic artists. And then you have the occasional quirky people that don't do that, which is cute. But I don't know. It's a little exhausting. And thank God I'm not looking for a roommate. I'm rooming with my best friend, actually, which I'm very excited about. But that's kind of exhausting. And you don't get a real picture of who these people are, because everyone's trying to look presentable for the 4,000 people they're going to be going to school with in a year. So
it's like, you know that you're being fake when you post it. And you know that everyone is fake. And I get why people do it. Like, I so many times have, like, I have a folder saved on my phone of, like, the photos I'm going to put in my post. But, like, I just don't understand why. I mean, I understand why, but it's so interesting that everyone is, like, so dedicated to this image that we all know isn't real.
Right. And we'll find our friends. I mean, I want to make friends off of common interests, like, by going to, like, a social justice club and meeting people, not by, like, this girl on Facebook that likes Ariana Grande. Like, I'll find you if you like Ariana Grande, but not from the Facebook group.
Is there an Ariana Grande club at Michigan?
Not that I know of. Maybe I'll start it. We'll see.
You should. What's so weird about colleges is, like, they love to highlight how many clubs they have, and they love to highlight that they have, like, quirky clubs. And I think at every single college, they're like, we have a boring club and a boring club and a boring club and a cheese club and a Harry Potter club. Those are just
and
the ones that
they like. A squirrel watching club.
A squirrel watching club. I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, I think Kalamazoo said something, like, about that, or cloud watching, or squirrel something, I don't know, something quirky.
This worked out well for you, because you're rooming with someone that you know.
Yeah.
But, like, I've had so much roommate stress, because you only see, like, the success stories, you know? Mm-hmm. But because these posts are so fake, you know that you're really rooming blind no matter what, unless you know the person in real life. So it's like, you just want to like take the plunge and like room completely blind, or do you want to like try your best to find someone? And I'm trying right now to find someone. I'm like having conversations with people, and it is so stressful because it's like you're dating them. You're just like trying to get closer and closer and closer to like the question of like, will you room with me? Yeah. But everyone's scared to do it. It's the most stressful thing.
Yeah, I bet. I was, yeah, that's, I mean, that's how I sort of got agreed to room with my friend Jenna, because we were at dinner and we were like, yeah, so what are we doing about this roommate thing? And I was like, I don't know, it's so stressful. Like, you know, there's not that many girls from around here that got in, and, you know, rooming blind is scary. And then we were like, should we room together? And we just agreed that, like, that made the most sense. But I can imagine that would be really stressful. And you don't know how someone is going to be in person. You don't know how someone lives. You don't know how late they stay up. And that's not something that comes up in conversation. So it can be dicey. It can be scary.
Yeah. You know that these girls aren't like having a chill night in and doing yoga in the mornings. Like, you know that they're coming home in the middle of the night, very drunk.
Right. Right. And that's why I think I'm just so excited to live with Jenna, is because we know how we live. We've gone to camp with each other for 10 years. And we both need our sleep a lot. So, like, we're going to be studying, but we're certainly not going to be up till 4 in the morning on FaceTime.
You also, one of the first things that you said to me about rooming with Jenna when you first decided to room together is that you guys wear the same size and clothes, which is just very convenient.
I cannot wait. We literally are the exact same size. She's maybe an inch taller than me, but, like, we can share shoes, we can share clothes, and that's going to be awesome.
That's the dream. I love that. Maybe I need to have some size specifications for my roommates, but I feel like that's not going to go over well in terms of making friends.
Yeah, probably not. Like, tell me your measurements and your hip width.
Yeah, I need to know. If we don't wear the same jean size, we're not a good fit.
Yeah.
Okay, we're introducing a new segment on this show, which is called Maya's Morality Test. It was inspired by Shabbat dinner last week when we were all a little bit tense and I was getting annoyed with my parents for some of the moral choices they were making. Here's what actually happened is, a couple summers ago, my dad and my brothers built like a playhouse out of like wood, and they got like a box of masks, like N95 masks, for when they were staining the wood and like using like saws, and there was like dust everywhere. And my dad, like, casually mentioned that he, like, had a couple of masks downstairs. And I was like, oh, well, it's, like, it's an open box and we only have two. But, like, if we had extra, like, you donate them, right? And he was like, well, after I had for our family. And I was like, well, how are they going to help our family, Abba? Like, the doctors and the nurses need them more than us. And he was like, well, we might need them. Like, who knows? And I was like, Abba, you donate them, right? Like, tell me you donate them. And then I, like, kept on telling my parents they were failing my morality test, and then I kind of went after them for eating red meat, but I eat red meat too, so whatever. Anyway, that inspired this new segment called Maya's Morality Test. You are allowed to ask questions, but I can choose not to answer them. Okay, here we go. You live in a place where the only available meat is factory farmed. Kosher meat is factory farmed. You keep kosher in this scenario, as you do in real life.
I do, in real life, yes.
Okay, the animals from these factory farms have short, miserable lives and are treated terribly. The farm that raises them also has terrible environmental practices. They, like, dump things in water. Their owner has also been accused of multiple crimes, ranging from animal abuse to arson. However, you would be able to buy meat that was wild hunted. These animals lived, like, long, healthy lives, and the person who hunts them is a public school kindergarten teacher who volunteers every week. However, this meat is not kosher. Okay, in this situation, you need to eat meat every day, or else, like, you'll die. Like, that's just how you work.
Okay.
Also, it would break your family's hearts if they knew you were eating non-kosher meat, and, like, they would have to know. What would you do? Like, it would really break their hearts.
This is tough.
Like, might be fatal.
Okay, don't...
Remember, this guy's been accused of arson.
I gotta go with the kosher meat.
Okay, you failed my morality test.
I figured as much. You know, I don't, and it's funny because I just watched Tiger King, so I should be, like, caring about animal rights, because that's the whole message, I guess. But I don't know.
Okay, so you failed, and you will not receive one of the N95 masks that my dad would be hoarding if he had them to hoard in the apocalypse.
Okay, well,
fine. You win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I guess you do.
To use a favorite phrase of yours.
Yes, it is.
Okay, if you could give a piece of advice to your parents, or, like, if there was something you could tell yourself, like Emily of a couple of years ago, what would it be?
Well, I'll answer both. So, if I could tell Emily a few years ago anything, I would say to keep persisting, which is sounds corny, I know, but that truly got me through everything I've been through, like, to get to where I am. I had a lot of times where it was just in terms of, like, my health and stuff, it was really easy to stop, to go back, to revert to old habits, and I did sometimes, but the message of, like, keep persisting, because it'll have great benefits is something I tell myself, and a lot of times a couple years ago, it was hard to see any sort of change that was possible, or anything happening to me that, like, would be a noticeable change, but I'd tell myself to keep working, keep persisting, because it would pay off. And in terms of what I'd tell my parents, and not to sound narcissistic, but you guys did a good job. I'm pretty confident about myself and my responsibility and my future, and I, like, if I raise a kid to be like me at 17 years old, I'll be pretty happy. Which sounds really talky, but I mean it in, like,
it's true. It's pretty true.
Possible. Like, I'm very assured that I have all the tools I need to be successful and to be safe. And if I can raise a kid the same way, then I'll be pretty happy.
I think, like, when I look at my peers, many of them are, like, not, I don't think, are, like, I guess no one's prepared, but I'm, like, oh, like, you're gonna have some struggles in college, but I feel like you're very well prepared. You're, like, you're pretty much an adult. I think that of all my friends, you're the one who's the most an adult.
Aw, that means a lot. You know, I take that as a compliment. I had to grow up fast. My parents got divorced when I was 12, and it kind of makes you grow up. You have to learn a lot of responsibility that a lot of kids don't need to learn until they move out. And, you know, for better or for worse, I sort of came into this adult role a lot earlier than a lot of people did. So I'd say for better, I guess, if I'm answering that, because I do feel really prepared to step out into the world and be an adult, yeah.
See, it makes sense that you're, like, emotionally mature, but you're also just, like, you were really good at driving, like, when you started driving, and, like, I wasn't good at driving until I had my license for, like, a year, and, like, that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, you were just really good.
I was good. I don't, some things I do, don't surprise me. Like, it wouldn't surprise me that I'd be a good driver. Like, some, I don't know.
None of us were surprised.
I don't know how that comes off, but, yeah, I was like, oh, I'm good at that. Cool. I'm kind of, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we cut that part out. I sound, like, obnoxious.
No, I loved it. Thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any products you'd like to plug, any TikTok accounts that you'd like to recommend?
Absolutely. Okay, well, follow me on TikTok first of all, because we know I need the validation, at Emily Feld with 4 D's at the end. That is EmilyFeldDDDD. I make a lot of content. I pretend that I'm a really good dancer. I use my 10 years of dance training that I no longer do to perform impeccable TikTok dances. So
you have, like, a serious face in all of them, and, like, I think that's what, like, makes it work.
Probably. I get really into it. I enjoy myself.
What's your favorite pasta shape?
Definitely bow ties.
Okay, but you and I both love a good medium shell.
Yes, yes. Medium shell, you can't really go wrong with a medium shell.
Right. Right, my guess last week, just, like, her, she likes long and thin shapes, and I just don't, I disagree, and, like, that can't be, like, a recurring thing on this.
Yeah, no, they have to be compact and, like, yeah, not long.
Mm-mm. Definitely, definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe, leave a review, give us 5 stars. You can contact me at The Real Maya Gamer on like every social media. And I'll be back next week with another episode. Bye.